TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Welcome in. Another edition of Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore coming at you here on Thursday, August 15th. Schedule's been out for a little under a week now. We've got some news as Jared Bayless won't be returning to the Wolves. Not that anyone expected him to,
everybody,
but he's
just
going
off
to China.
The podcast. They just turned it off.
Yeah, right. I mean, we just gave them all the information they wanted. But Jared Bayless going to China. The schedule's out. We have new win-loss projections from ESPN. Dane, what do you want to dive into first here?
Yeah, there's the schedule, of course, but I think it'd be cool to just kind of look at maybe the West at large.
And yeah.
We've talked about it before. We're not believing that the Timberwolves are going to be a playoff team necessarily,
no.
But that's just hard. In the West, I'm looking at it, it's eight teams. It's six firmly in there. And then you got Portland and San Antonio, who are like the question marks.
It is wild to me that Portland's coming off of a Western Conference Western Conference final season, and they're not like a lock.
And didn't necessarily like get worse.
No, like, they're different. They got different. I wouldn't say they got worse.
Right, and so it's,
I actually can kind of talk myself into their offseason. Like, yeah. I kind of like a lot of the moves that they made
for sure. Long term, like big picture, they're setting themselves up for a Dame and CJ future.
Yeah.
And what else do you do if you're them? But anyways, like, if you look at the West and you're a team, even like, I would put Sacramento, Dallas, and New Orleans in a tier above the Wolves, right?
Yeah, I would too.
And even if you're one of those teams who's a tier above the Wolves, in my opinion, then, like, something's got to break with one of those top eight teams for them to fall off. I mean, do you see any reality where one of those top six teams don't make the playoffs? And Houston, Denver, LA, Utah, and Golden State?
The reality for Golden State is if something happens to Steph Curry, they don't make the playoffs. That's
right.
It.
Yeah.
But and only because Klay Thompson's out and their margin for error is significantly different than what it's been for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, that's the reality of their situation. I expect them to be in the playoffs, but if Steph gets hurt, that's where things change there. Or if Draymond and Steph both get hurt, because then it's D'Angelo Russell and who else? And we don't know what that's going to look like there.
They become like the bad Brooklyn Nets from last year or something.
Which were a lot of fun. But
those other teams above them, to the injury point, it's like Utah could lose a guy and you still put them in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Both the LA teams are we didn't bear in the lead a little bit. DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know. Yeah. Is he even a guy on the Lakers? We weren't sure.
I don't think he would have started.
Well,
I don't think he was going to start.
He tore his ACL.
And I presumably won't be playing this year, which really, really does stink for him after what he's been through injury wise the past couple of seasons. It's really terrible.
I think, though, the West is, those top teams in the West are good and relatively deep.
Yeah.
And at least like deep in the top end, if that makes sense, where they got like four guys or something, like, you know, Utah they go back to, or, you know, even the Lakers, like they're not bottom deep, but they've got no.
I like a lot of what they did after missing out on Kawhi. Mm-hmm. Like, I like Danny Green
exactly.
as a guy. I like how their roster kind of filled out. It's not the best roster in the world, in my opinion, but I think it's a solid one. They're relatively deep.
Totally. And Denver's deep. So it's just. It's a weird. What do you go into, like? What do you go into the season for expectations if you're not one of those eight teams in the West? Like, how do you? What is your, you know, what is your goal of the year? Because if you are a team like the Wolves, or I mean, maybe not New Orleans, but like Sacramento, you know, Sacramento seems like they're pushing for the playoffs. But if we go big picture, it would almost be better if you do drop to like the sixth spot. And I'm not trying to get teams to tank before the season hasn't even started, but when you're looking at such a wall ahead of you, you've got to prioritize the season a little bit differently.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because in today's age of the tanking age, I guess we can call it, you see a lot of teams at the top and a lot of teams at the bottom. You don't really see too many teams in the middle, but I think that that's potentially going to change in the West this year. The Wolves have obviously essentially been perennially in the middle, but there haven't been a lot of franchises that are like that. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to look at this year, New Orleans is going to be a team that's in the middle, but they're in the middle because they're not quite ready to be a super competitive team, but they're also not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination right now. If you look at Sacramento, they're probably also in that middle area. I think mm-hmm. that you're going to see teams there that you really haven't seen. And As for what their goals are, I really don't know. For some of them, for New Orleans, it's to progress and get better as the season goes on, because you should be setting up for 2020-21 to be a competitive season and opening a window from there on out. And same thing with Sacramento. With the Wolves, it's a little different because...
Yeah, well, when the middle's so thick,
yeah,
then you go, you know, what do we do? And you need to, you kind of need to show a progress. Like, it would be bad if the Wolves had a 25-win season you know, a building for the future standpoint. But when you are hitting this wall, that's just going to inherently, you know, push you down a little bit. So I don't know, outside of like Memphis and Phoenix, and even Phoenix is doing weird stuff. Like, how do you convince your team that it's okay that we're not in the playoffs this year? The majority of the West isn't there.
OKC will be in that bottom tier too.
But they oddly have like vets who...
I don't see them being able to put it all together in the same way that some other teams that can kind of be structured like that can. I think that it's going to be, I'm not sure how much Chris Paul is going to want to be there, and that's going to be a big deal. That's going to affect things a lot. I like SGA a lot, but he's not ready to be the guy on a playoff team. Like, he was a piece on a playoff team last year, but it's going to be his team for the future there, and he's not a guy that's ready to lead that to the playoffs.
But I mean, I look at it like Gallinari and Steven Adams. Like, those are good NBA players. Those are players who are top pieces on a middling team.
Yeah.
And, like...
I also think that they're going to continue to wheel and deal. Like, I don't think Gallinari is going to play the entire season in OKC. He's an expiring, too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would expect him to be dealt for a draft pick at some point.
He might be the single most likely player to be traded.
Yeah, so Steven Adams is a nice player, but last year Steven Adams looked like he was 35, and if he's going to be one of your best players, he's not going to look younger.
Yeah, I don't know. I still like Steven Adams.
I do too.
I like him a lot.
I don't think that he can be the guy on a good team.
It'll be interesting to see him play without Russell Westbrook.
Yes, very, very much.
Because that's been obviously someone he's been tied to his whole career. Like, is there room for him, you know, to be more? But these are the teams that the Wolves are lingering around, and I don't know. More than ever, it seems hard for me to paint a picture where two or three of those playoff teams, the teams we project to make the playoffs, fall out of it. I mean, sure, last year we would have said like New Orleans is a playoff team, and then everything hits the fan and they're out. Like, that'll probably happen to one of those teams, maybe two of them. But it seems like a pretty solid bunch.
It's hard to forecast who those teams could be. I mean, maybe Portland. I'm not going to pick San Antonio to miss the playoffs until the year after they actually do miss the playoffs. I'm just, right. If you have made the playoffs for, 19 years consecutively now, I'm not going to be the guy that says, I think you're going to miss it this year. This is the year you're not going to be good. I'm not doing that. I refuse to do that, especially getting DeJounte Murray back.
Yeah, I was like, what suggests that they got worse?
Nothing does. Yeah. But it's just kind of, at this point, process of elimination. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not one of the six best teams, they're going to find a way to be the sixth seed somehow.
I agree. And, yeah, you're up against it in the West right now. That's just life.
What do you deem a successful season for the Wolves as we sit here in the middle of August talking about this? What should the goals be for this franchise at this point?
Honestly, you kind of put win total to the side, and you look at individual development of players, and I don't know, what I've been saying is it's a vibe, you know, and what is the vibe around Jarrett Culver? What is the vibe around Robert Covington? What is the vibe of the group, of the starting unit, of the bench? And just because they don't have as much talent as the other teams, you're going to lose games, but you can lose game. Like, you can be a 35 win team. I think they can be a 35-win team, and you say that was a solid season.
Yeah.
You know, for them to really, like...
A 35-win team this year would feel much different than the 36-win team did last
year. Absolutely. It's a different Western Conference, and it's a different group of talent. Now, I think they could be better than 35. I really could see, you know, 40, 41, because there is a world where Robert Covington, you know, is back. I don't like the assumption that every time we bring up Robert Covington, we have to say, well, if he's healthy, and like he seems like, to me, he's being treated like Joel Embiid was to some extent, where it was like the assumption is that he's never going to be able to be all the way back, or that he, like, it's an impossibility that he could play 75 games. Robert Covington could definitely play 75 games.
I think part of this is on me, and part of it is my own fault, and that I've almost forgot how good he is because I haven't seen him play in so long. And that's my fault for doing that. But that's the reality of the situation for me is I haven't seen him play since Tom Thibodeau was the head coach.
Well, and it was, he played 22 games, right? So, and it was awesome. It broke down 11 and 11 with him. There was 11 awesome games right after the trade when they came in. They were awesome. Third best net rating in the league.
Oh, they were terrific. He was the head of that second unit that was just destroying teams. I mean, they were eating other teams alive with that second unit.
Absolutely. And then it was 11 games. He missed a random game in Portland where it was all of a sudden we're like, what? Covington's not playing? And he came back the next game and he wasn't. I think it's when something started acting up with his knee. The bone bruise hadn't actually happened because that happened in New Orleans.
Yeah. But right around New Year's.
It was New Year's Eve, yeah. And but his knee began getting wonky right there, and then those next 11 games actually weren't as good. Yeah. So to your point, it really was great Robert Covington. It was 11 games of last season, which is fewer games than Jimmy Butler is even on the team for, if you put it in that context. So yes.
That's wild, actually.
It is, but he still is Robert Covington, and he has a track record of being a good player outside of those 11 games before. I mean, obviously, there's the all-defensive team the year before in Philadelphia. Like, he, I don't know. I think I will take people's Robert Covington stock if they're selling it right now.
Yeah, I'm not trying to sell my stock in him. I'm a very big believer in Robert Covington. It's just I've kind of forgotten about Robert Covington a little bit.
Well, and Robert Covington's going to play a different position this year.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to see is how he's going to be able to maybe handle some of that physicality that's going to exist at the four when he's been a three for the most part. I mean, he's been able to do it in spurts, but he's never been a team's starting four.
Absolutely. And that's what the first thing I thought of when the schedule came out and they had Brooklyn in the opener. I was like, well, that's literally the perfect team if you're going to go really small to start your season.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go DJ and Jared Allen at center. They're not going to play them together.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have that, and then it's like Kurucs, Chandler, and Torian Prince are like their power forwards.
Yeah.
Like they are aligned positionally the exact same way as the Wolves are. So it might go well, and the Wolves are like, we're fat, we're going small, we're going fast, and it's working. We match up well with them. They play Charlotte the next game, who just, they're a little bit bigger, but they suck.
Oh, they're going to be so bad.
So it's like, it's going to start rolling, but then it's funny, the next two games, they've got the home opener against Miami.
Jimmy Butler comes to town.
That's big and bruising. Game four, how the hell do the Wolves guard the 76ers?
I have no idea.
I mean, that's a problem for everybody in the league. But Joel Embiid at center, so you got to throw Cat on him, right?
Yep.
So then their power forward is Al Horford, and the Wolves' power forward is Robert Covington, right? Can't put Covington on him there on Horford. You got to put Covington on Ben Simmons, right? Yeah. You have to do that. Because you can't put Jeff Teague on Ben Simmons.
I think that's your best bet defensively, and it's not always going to work this way now because they're playing him at the four, is putting Covington on the offensive initiator on the other team. Kind of what the Raptors did with Kawhi Leonard.
Yes.
Where Kawhi was, I'm the best defender in the NBA, obviously, but you would put him on whoever, just maybe not the best scorer, the best whatever, but the offensive initiator, the guy that makes the offense go, and that is Ben Simmons there. I think that that's what you have to do with, and maybe it's different because it's game number four, it's October, it's whatever, different compared to the playoffs, but that's what I would want to see.
I would assume that has to happen, but then you're like, okay, so they still Where's Jeff Teague go? Josh Richardson, maybe? I mean, I guess you could pull that off. But then you still, the two players left are Al Horford and Tobias Harris, who are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And you got what?
Andrew Wiggins and Jake Layman or Jarrett Culver.
Yeah. So then what's going to be, that game is going to be illustrative to the notion of, are they going to do different starting lineups?
Yeah.
Because if it's me, you got to start Noah Vonleh in that game.
I would. That's certainly, if there is a matchup to start Noah Vonleh in, that's the one.
And it's also, to take it a step further, it's a game to not start a point guard.
Yeah.
And go with the Wiggins. Go with the Culver. Go big in that game.
I'll be fascinated to see how they do that. Because if there's a game that the Wolves can experiment in, that's it.
Well, and it's a team who doesn't play a point guard. I mean, Ben Simmons is a point guard, but Ben Simmons isn't a point guard.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you...
I mean, how tall is Richardson?
He's 6'6 like, or something.
Yeah, he's the smallest guy in their starting lineup.
Exactly. And so,
and the Wolves' smallest guy is 6'1.
But what they'll do is they're just gonna run Horford and Embiid pin downs on Teague the whole game. And do you remember when the Wolves lost by 42 to the Sixers? You know how they lost that game? Teague got crushed over and over because they put him on Redick.
Everyone got crushed.
Well, but that's what it was. It was the start of the game, and Redick was just wide open over and over because Teague is like okay if you put him on a, if he's guarding an average, you know, starting point. Like, if you put him on DJ Augustine, fine.
Yeah.
But once it's a Ben Simmons or a bigger, more dynamic point guard, he can't guard him.
And it's worth mentioning that he was clearly not healthy when that game took place either. He was dealing with something mm-hmm. all year in his ankle or his foot or whatever you want to call it. So that's worth mentioning. But right. I don't think that that necessarily changes the equation too much there.
And I'm not suggesting that Teague shouldn't play, shouldn't be the starter. I think he's an important part of this season just by scarcity. But there's going to be these teams that this idea that the Wolves are going to play fast and smaller-ish, that's just not going to work against everybody. Yet, what are we hearing when we talk to Rosas, when we talk to Saunders? We want teams to adjust to us.
Philadelphia is not going to have to do that.
Philadelphia is not going to adjust to anybody.
No.
Then this is going to be a problem for all the teams. You keep going down, and it's like even another couple games later. Well, Milwaukee, what are you going to do there? Even Memphis. Memphis is a bad team. But how do you guard Jonas Valanciunas and Jaren Jackson when you're going with this alleged starting lineup the Wolves are going to have? Like, I'm excited to see the fast group, but I don't think you can just be like, this is our starting lineup.
No, I don't think that this team can do that. And they have talked about, like you said, where they want to make teams adjust to them, but are they going to be good enough to force that? Because teams that have made other teams adjust to them are the Milwaukees of the world last year, Golden State, mm-hmm. and you're talking about teams that are competing to win an NBA title. The Wolves are not there right now.
Right.
And if you're not good enough, no one's going to have to adjust to you.
And like Brooklyn, that was like their ethos last year, right? Like mm-hmm. we don't care who the opponent is, like we're gonna run out this small group. But it's not like their offense was great. They're 19th in offensive rating last year.
Yeah.
Like, great. You went small. It didn't necessarily work. Like, cool, you won 42 games, but you weren't like this dynamic team.
Well, I think that they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish last year, which was they wanted to show off their team building, their culture, their player development. They mm-hmm. wanted to win games. They wanted to put themselves in a great position to land a couple of free agents in the summer.
And check, check, check. They did all those things.
They got an
A+. What about the future? What about the future? Can you become a contender when you're a team that's as small as that is? Can you rely? And I don't know. Maybe the answer is yes.
Well, and that wasn't their plan, obviously. Like, their plan was to show off for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving because then they wouldn't have to do that ever
again.
So
is that the Wolves' plan?
It can't be the Wolves' plan because there's not another Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving awaiting this summer.
Well, there's somebody out there at some point. I don't think it's as likely as those, obviously. But yeah, are you just trying to develop this culture, this style, and all this so eventually you get the next D'Angelo Russell? Yeah, probably. I think that's what the goal is. But what I just wonder about a lot is, okay, once you do get that next guy, are we still going to be this tiny team? One big, one guard, three wings? I mean, in a way, that's modern. I can see that working, but I can also see it not working.
Like, I think that's also why they've tried to emphasize culture maybe over a certain type of offensive system. And we've seen this in Houston, too, because what Houston runs now is different than what Houston ran when they had Dwight Howard. And
sure,
they found a way to be not quite as successful then as they have been recently, but mm-hmm. they found a way to be successful. I'm willing to bet that what they're going to run this upcoming season with James Harden and Russell Westbrook is going to be different than what they ran the past couple
You're
of
right.
seasons with James Harden and Chris Paul. So those things are always going to change. That's why I think the Wolves have been trying to push the culture thing mm-hmm. forward more so than, well, we're going to revolutionize what we do offensively. We're going to have a great system for Carl. We're going to build a culture and fit a system around who we have.
And that is the narrative that they've been pumping. They haven't told us how they're going to play offense.
No,
they haven't told us how they're going to play defense.
Mm-mm.
Like, I think that's going to be dynamic to your Rockets point. It's going to depend on who the roster is or, you know, who's on the roster. But right now, who's on the roster, there's only so many ways to play with that group if you are going to be that small. And I do think against certain opponents, like I said, Brooklyn, like that's going to, you can match up with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this whole narrative of the league is going so small and so modern and this and that. But you know what a pretty modern element of the game is? Is like, if you can dominate the boards. If you can dominate the boards,
I don't think the narrative that they're going small and modern is necessarily even super correct. If you look at the teams that were competing to win the title last year, look at the Western Conference Finals, look at the Eastern Conference Finals. Three of the four teams that were playing in the Conference Finals were pretty long,
mm-hmm.
if the way you look at it.
Sure.
I mean, Steph is small, but Klay's really long. Kevin Durant, really long. Draymond Green, mm-hmm. and Boogie Cousins when he's healthy, whatever.
Yeah.
But then look at Milwaukee, look at Toronto, look how just I mean,
those big, are big teams.
Big might not be the right word, but long and athletic, and certainly not small.
Like sturdy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Certainly small. They were not small. They weren't playing. You can say they were playing small ball because they might have played an undersized or non-traditional center, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean they're playing small. I think that that's a narrative that gets kind of wrongly pushed in
I agree.
In today's world.
And I'm actually excited to see whatever this is that the Wolves are trying to implement, like see it transpire and happen, because I think elements of it are going to work. But it's going to have to evolve over the course of the year and into the future too, because I don't know. I question how well it's going to work if Kat is your only true big.
Yeah.
And to that point, I think it's going to force their hand, like I said, and have to start Noah Vonleh sometimes.
Well, it's also going to be interesting because Carl, for the most part, didn't play center last year, at least not when Taj Gibson was on the floor with him. Carl was a four, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be interested to see how this team's going to function with him at five primarily.
It's one of the biggest questions is how is he going to be able to defend big fives?
Traditional fives. Or when they go to Philadelphia October 30th, what's it going to be when he has to match up with Joel Embiid?
Exactly.
What's it going to be when he's got to match up with some of these other big guys that,
Jokic,
that exist?
Drummond, Gasol, mm-hmm. whatever. Like
and he's going to get tested with all of them within the first 4 weeks.
Right. And, I mean, Carl is, I think he's more capable of being the guy who can handle the bruising than he is a defensive reader.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, the biggest issue he's had in his defensive game is being able to read and react to the pick and roll.
And maybe not as much last year. I think this is the one thing defensively he got better at last year is I think earlier in his career, he found himself out of position too often. Like I think last mm-hmm. year he was in the right place at the right time more often. And that you don't have to be the best defender in the world. If you're in the right place and at the right time, you're going to be successful more often.
I don't think it's any question that he didn't take a step forward defensively last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like absolutely the fouling is concerning, and there is still elements of it because he still wasn't like an above average defensive center.
No.
But he took strides from being that bottom tier of it. And so can he continue to progress on that? And I think I've talked about it with somebody. It's like that's what Vanderpool did with Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Is he got him to believe that defense was important in Portland, and CJ McCollum too, and those guys, can that resonate with Kat enough? Because I don't think it's a physical thing. I think the mental element is going to take some manipulating with him, but can you get a consistent buy-in to do it every single possession?
I'm curious if they can get him to consistently stop fouling. Because that's, like you said, that's one of the biggest questions. NBA TV right now is doing their team day. Like every team gets a day where they just mm-hmm. they're kind of showcased on NBA TV. It's August. They're looking
Classic
for programming.
August.
I get it. Yeah. So the Wolves, this speaks to the Wolves just not having the most illustrious history. One of their games that was being showcased was Ryan Saunders' first game in OKC this past January. I forgot Carl played like 20 minutes because he had five fouls. Like Andrew Wiggins was great. The story was Andrew was Ryan's first win, all of that. And it should have been. But you look at that final box score, Carl played like 24 minutes and gave you next to nothing because you couldn't stay on the floor.
It happened a lot. Not an isolated incident.
Yes, not an isolated incident. That's just the one that I was watching on NBA TV last week. That needs to disappear.
Yeah. You know what an interesting parallel is what Toronto did with Marc Gasol last mm-hmm. year in the playoffs. They cut out his high ball screening action in their offense because that was the nature of it when you're a big dude there and you're consistently setting high ball screens or just, you know, you're in that action in the way. It's just, it's easier to pick up fouls. And Nick Nurse knew that they needed 30 minutes of Marc Gasol, and they needed it evenly distributed throughout all the quarters to be able to stay competitive in the games. So they took Gasol out of those actions, and he wasn't picking up offensive fouls because that was a problem for them during the season because he would get in foul trouble. A lot of centers, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. Setting screens without fouling is an issue just because you're big.
And that's not even always on the center. Like a lot of time that's on the guard.
Totally. And yeah, like a discipline and an execution of the guard, a synergy there. But a way to compensate for that is to not use Kat in those actions as much. And I know everyone wants to think about, you know, Kat is this dynamic pick and roll big, and like Yes, he could. But if you're going to run, if you're going to run 16 high screens by Cat a game over the course of the year, he's going to get a lot of offensive fouls.
He's going to pick up
that's
three fouls a game doing it.
It happens to, that's a thing across the league. So I think they're going to use him a lot more like they, like the Nuggets used Jokic at the nail extended out above the break there where he's catching it there less so than he's screening.
Yeah.
At least until he can start working out some of those kinks, because it was ridiculous. If you look at the, I mean, it was Jaren Jackson was the same issue. Jackson was the only player in the league who was committing more fouls than Cat was last year until Jackson went out. But it's the same thing. It's a lack of discipline. He was a rookie. He didn't have it figured out. Cat didn't have it figured out. Now, theoretically, for both of those players, it gets better over time. But Saunders and the staff, I think, is going to need to adjust for that. You can't, you just, it's all about optimizing Cat. And using someone else as a screener in those situations is a way to not, to get him out of foul trouble. You lose some dynamic element of that by him not being the roller, but you know, best ability is availability. There you
yeah,
go.
I mean, Carl was first in the NBA in offensive fouls committed. He was tied for first with Giannis. They both had 68 offensive fouls. As our table goes up here,
I did it again.
he was first in the NBA in offensive fouls committed. That's something that has to go down.
It's something you can, it's on him to be disciplined to do that, but it's also, that's a coaching, it's like anything. It's like you want to shoot more threes, put guys in more situations to shoot threes.
Yeah.
You want Cat to foul less offensively, put him in situations that are less likely for him to foul in, and that will limit their offense to some extent because he's going to be their best screener and roller. But
or best screen and pop.
Yes,
that's,
absolutely.
That's going to be a huge part of his game, or could be a huge part of his game. And we've seen it be a big part before because he's such a good shooter for a guy his size. And like, there's really no one else quite like him that can do everything he can do.
And pace, like they've said, playing faster and with pace is a way to get into the half court with and finding an advantage without a screen. Because what's a screen for? To find an offensive advantage.
Yep.
You can find similar advantages just by playing fast, beating them up on the floor, getting a guy out of defensive position. I think that's a way to compensate for Cat's foul trouble on the offensive end.
Yeah. So looking at the schedule here, the schedule makers did the Wolves no favors, at least not in my opinion, with not having a homestand longer than three games, opening up on the road out east, and just I think they're traveling the eighth most miles, which part of that is where the team's located.
I don't know, man. That's all overrated to me.
I don't think that the schedule makers did them any favors. I really don't.
Okay. But the first 23 games, nine of them.
When is the 23rd game? Because I'm looking at the schedule. I don't want to count to 23.
The 23rd is Phoenix.
Okay.
It's Phoenix. So I'm doing myself a little bit of a favor because that's a bad team that I'm including in this. But there's nine teams in the league who have a worse projection.
Over-under total
from Vegas. Under 35.5 wins what the Wolves are at. They played those teams nine times in the first 23 games.
Yeah.
What can you ask for more than that? Do they start on the road twice? That sucks. Like, there's issues like that. And yes, March, they have a terrible stretch of six road games where they start in Houston and end in Utah. That's brutal.
Ending in Utah's terrible.
You know what's not terrible about it? That happening in March.
Yeah.
The Wolves are probably going to, more likely than not, those games, it will be advantageous to lose. So I don't care about that.
And then when you do get into
the beginning of the season's easy.
Do get into it being advantageous to lose, their April's the easiest month of their season for them. Like that's another thing I looked at. Like, well, you know, if they
are trying to tank
at the end, they've got, New York, Phoenix, Sacramento, New York again, Dallas, Detroit. The two LA games will be tough, but the rest of that month's really easy.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I like that the schedule's fun because now we know who they're playing.
Yeah.
But at the same point, I look at the season in like 20 game chunks, and I'm not worrying about games 21 through 82 at all.
Sure.
Look at the beginning of the year. Start strong. Figure out who you are in that period of time. You know, adjusting for who those opponents are, and you know, figure it out later. It's a long year.
Very long year. It'll be an interesting one to say the least. All right, the win loss projections from ESPN Plus.
Based on Real Plus Minus. Okay. And yeah, the Wolves stacked up pretty favorably in it.
More favorably than you expected?
39.5.
That's more favorably than I would have expected.
Vegas has them at 35.5, and it shakes out all pretty similarly to what the Vegas you know, the Vegas projections are. But the Wolves are a little bit higher than that. And the Carmelo ones, too, from 538, I think they have them at like 41 or 42.
That's really high.
Why do you think that is?
Why it's high or why do I personally think
it's
high?
No. Why do you think? I mean,
I don't know their formula. I don't know the Carmelo formula. Like, I don't know what numbers they crunched to get there. And I know that 538's been maybe not the most accurate with a lot of NBA things. Like, I know that they at one point wrote an article saying, yeah, LeBron has broken our system. Like, we can't calculate LeBron. We're sorry. Sure. Because they had, like, pegged the Cavs the 1 year, like, gave them a 1% chance to win the East, and then they go out and they win the East. Like, they couldn't do that. So I don't know what numbers that they use to crunch, and I don't – they're counting on maybe – certainly counting on a bounce back from Robert Covington and a healthy Robert Covington more so than I think I personally have or have in my mind. Counting on Carl taking another step, which I do think will happen. I don't necessarily know that their backcourt's going to be strong enough to make that, and it's also going to be curious what Jared Culver looks like. I think that you're going to have to count on Jared Culver a lot. If you're going to win 40-plus games, it's going to be because Jared Culver looks like the second or third best player in this draft, without question.
Right. Is that possible?
Him to be the second or third best player?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it is. I don't know right away if it is. I think that he's got a ways to go. And, I mean, I don't know how well college is going to translate to the NBA. But I think it's certainly possible for him to be the second or third best player in this draft.
Trae Young was the fifth pick, right?
Yes. He was the fifth pick. It was weird because Dallas and Atlanta traded, where Luka Doncic was technically the third pick.
But that's what you're basically saying there, is that he has a season similar to what, different positions, but similar to what, you know, what Trae did last year.
Sure.
And I don't know, man. That seems like a lot.
I also think the number one overall pick this year will be much better than the, maybe not much better, but will be better than the number one overall pick was last year.
Sure.
Or at least he should be.
Yeah, I kind of go to opportunity too.
Yeah,
when I look at Culver, and we're guessing right now what opportunity is. Trae Young started.
He's going to get minutes.
Yeah,
they're not going to pin Jared Culver to the bench, or at least I don't expect them to.
But it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. If you need to start two bigs, they're going to have to do that sometimes, right?
Yes,
that means Vonleh.
If they don't, it's going to be ugly.
So if you plug in, because right now we know four guys are starting: Teague, Wiggins, Covington, Cat.
Yeah.
Then the fifth one is the question mark, right? Mm-hmm. And that becomes a question of Lehman, Vonleh, Okogie, Culver. Those are the guys. And if call it 16 games of the year, you got to go big.
I don't think Okogie's in that discussion. I think that Okogie's probably better served being a sixth man.
Yeah, I mean,
when they're
that's
fully
what you
healthy.
Think, but do you think that's what they do?
When they're full, yes. I don't think that they start Okogie. I think that Okogie will
Ever?
Be. Not without injuries.
Okay.
I think they'd like to keep him as a sixth man. If you're going to
he's in that four guys.
He's going to be in the rotation. Like, there's no question about that. But I think that they're probably better served with him coming off the bench because he's that energy guy.
Okay, let's put him there. Never starts outside of injuries. So then we were talking about Lehman, Vonleh, and Culver.
Yeah.
For that fifth spot, that 28 to 30 minutes a night sort of guy. I think it's my opinion that Lehman is going to start from day one. Does that, and then I think it'll be that, and then it'll eventually turn into Culver.
Yeah.
Who will, because I think we talked about this on the last podcast, where if you look at historically kind of late lottery picks, they either start the whole season or by 20 games into the year, they're starting.
But it's also, you have to factor in the fact that the Wolves traded up to number six, and most guys that get picked number six are entering a team in a worse position than the Wolves.
Are they?
Typically, I think so.
Okay.
Or at least a team that won fewer games the year before.
Sure.
Because the Wolves were slotted, they had the 11th worst record, where most guys that are the sixth pick are going to the sixth worst team.
Sure. I think if they have to start Vonleh or Bell, a quarter of the games, then that's pushing out some Culver time. You're gonna start, Lehman is going to play a lot, if not start. What I'm getting at is I don't think there is any bit of a realistic reality where Culver is given the opportunity that Trae Young was last year.
Oh, no, that's not going to be the case. And that's why I don't.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think he can be a two or three.
I think maybe not this year, but like I think he can be that. I'm not saying he's going to be the number two or three pick or number two or three player in this class right now. I think if you're going to win 40 games, he has to be like really, really good right away. I don't see them winning that many games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the recipe for them to hit that Carmelo projection where they're a 500 team, because I don't see it right now.
What I'm saying is I agree. I think he could be a top two or three player in this class. But given the construct of the Wolves, I think it's going to be very hard for him to do that this year. Mm-hmm. And then to go off of your logic, if he can't get there, and that's what they need to be a 40-plus win team, they're not going to be a 40-plus win team.
I don't think they will be.
Right. Yeah. It's.
I mean, how many wins do you have them pegged at right now? Do you have them closer to Vegas?
I would take
Vegas,
slightly or? Over the 35.5. I would go between. So RPM has 39.5. And Vegas has 35.5. I think I'm a bigger believer in Covington than you are, impacted Covington this year. So with the caveat of being able to change my opinion, I would say...
Sure,
it's
August,
yeah,
man. You
say,
can change
I'd
your opinion three
right
times.
Now. Yeah, yeah. I would say... But look at with your Raptors, which actually turned out to be correct. You just said
I was on the
year,
Raptors early, man.
You're like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't look right anymore, but I picked it at the beginning of the year. So I don't know. It's going to be hard for them to crack. Man, it says 31% is what RPM for making the playoffs for the Wolves. That's high.
That's really high. I have them. Right now, I have the under. I think that they're like 32 to 34 wins. It's going to be 32, 33, 34. I have the under.
It's just going to be a ton of losing. 32 is going to be a ton of losing.
Yeah. It's not going to be the most fun year in the history of Wolves basketball if you're a Wolves fan.
Well, it could be fun and...
It's not going to be as fun as 04 was.
No, sure. So Tibbs's first year was
not fun.
Was 31, right?
31 and 51, yeah.
Yeah. That was so bad though. Like
but it
team,
was also miserable in part because Tibbs.
But like, that Tibbs, was a bad Tibbs, basketball team.
Tibbs isn't synonymous with fun.
True.
I think Ryan Saunders will be
so
more synonymous with fun.
He was so focused on winning. And the West is better. It's just 31 is a bad, bad team.
Yeah, it's not great.
And I don't see them. To me, that's putting them into the Phoenix, Memphis, OKC bubble. And I put them ahead of that. Honestly, I put them in a tier of their own where that's the worst group. Then it goes Wolves. And then you go New Orleans, Sacramento, and Dallas. And for me, I would put Sacramento close to the Wolves there.
I think it's 32, 33, 34. I think that they can avoid losing 50 mm-hmm. games. Yep. But I think it's going to be narrow.
And it helps historically Cat being very, very healthy.
Sure.
I mean, the majority of those guys have
yeah, that's
historically
the one positive thing
records.
You can always say about Andrew Wiggins because there are yep. a lot of negative things you can say about him. But the dude plays. Like, right. He is always on the court, and that's a positive. That's a tough thing to do in today's NBA. We see a lot of guys miss a lot of time.
Do you think we're at a point, 20 games into the season thing, where you would say... I honestly think playing Josh Okogie or Jarrett Culver in the starting role would be better than Andrew Wiggins.
No, because I think that you need to do the very most you can do to get Wiggins' value up for next summer.
Talking about just winning, though.
Just winning? It depends what Josh Okogie's shot looks like, because if he's shooting 29% from outside again, then no
I
for
think
him.
That should be the assumption.
If that's the assumption, then no there. And I can't tell about Jarrett Culver because
yeah,
I haven't
fair.
Seen him play yet. Like,
I think Andrew is going to be better than last year.
I do too.
And I think
I do too.
My answer to that question would be no. I think we will feel 20 games in the season that Josh brings some interesting things defensively, and Culver is developing into a player that we think should maybe get into the starting lineup, but in that layman role, not in the Wiggins role. Okay. It's not going to matter. They're going to start Wiggins no matter what. Yeah. I would assume. But you know, that's a conversation we've had a million times. Mm-hmm. Like over the course of last year, would it be advantageous to not start Andrew Wiggins? And the answer to that question last year was yes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I would say the answer to that question this year is no.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think that he's going to have a much better year this year than he had last year, and I think that that's beneficial for him. It's beneficial for the Wolves. Obviously, I mean, it is beneficial for everyone involved for a number of different reasons.
And if you're going to play with pace, and you're going to one way or another, the offense is going to be so much about going downhill
mm-hmm.
through pace or through pick and roll.
Yeah.
And Andrew Wiggins, at a minimum, is better at both of those things than Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver, and I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I mean, so that's why I really do think he's an integral part of this team, even though he was a mess last season.
Yeah, yeah. There's no doubt about that, and you're paying him to be an integral part of the team. He has to be. And him being one would probably help you in the future, too, because then you could look to have him be more than just a net neutral asset if you're trying to reshape this team with someone else that's not him.
Change the perception from him. Stop asking him to get you $28 million a year and
ask
say,
him
go
to get,
go
you,
get me 14.
Yep.
That, like, And if you don't want to think about it like that, I get it. You're frustrated with Wiggins, whatever. But it is going to be a so much more enjoyable and I think logical experience to ask that out of Andrew Wiggins.
Mm-hmm.
Be a starter.
Yep.
Be a starter. Earn $14
million. And we'll look like you belong.
And we'll eat the 14.
Look
we'll
like you belong on an NBA floor every night because you haven't been able to say that.
Yes. And I think that's possible.
I think it's fair, too. It's mm-hmm. a very fair ask from the organization. To
totally.
Have. Very fair.
Yeah.
You got anything else before we jump out of here?
It's August, man.
It's August.
It's like where we'd wrung out the sponge of, 45 minutes of Wolves talk.
Yeah, that's what we do well, Dane. Better than anyone else in this town. We talk Wolves in August.
Happy birthday to us, dude. Dane's birthday on Friday.
Happy birthday, Dane.
Yeah,
you're getting old, man.
Pump it up.
You're getting old. Me, I'm my birthday tomorrow, your birthday Saturday. Happy birthday to you. It's going to be a new year for both of us.
Yeah. And the Wolves.
And the Wolves, yes. That's Dane Moore. I'm Danny Cunningham. This has been Raised by Wolves. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com, and the all-new free ScoreNorth app. Be sure to download that on either the Apple Store or in the Google Play Store. It's available on both. Leave us a 5-star review, comment your favorite thing about the podcast, and we will be back next week. Talk to you later.